Save big money on everything at Menards. Take control of your outdoor space with Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. The Pump and Go container is ready and easy to use. With the Pump and Go sprayer, you don't need to mix your own liquid, and you get up to 10 minutes of continuous spray. Save big on Roundup, Weed, and Grass Killer. Plus, check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. I'm a 16-year-old girl, and this happened to me last year only a few weeks after I turned 15. For some background, my sister is 3 years older than me, and so this took place when she had only just turned 18. She had been dating her boyfriend on and off again for about 2 years. We'll name him Steven. Just so you know, my parents are divorced, so I lived with my mom, sister, and my older brother. We had our house renovated instead of moving out when the house got cramped. As for the layout, there's a very small bedroom that my brother has, a medium-sized bedroom my mom has, and then a large bedroom that me and my sister share. Well, as we got older, we obviously wanted our own space. So my mom had a wall built between the large room to make two smaller rooms. The only problem was that you'd have to walk through one room to get to the other. At first, I had the room that would have to be walked through by my sister so she was able to get to her room.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm gonna give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, back to the story. So, my sister's dating this guy who's the same age as our dad. And Steven also had a daughter the same age as my sister. This guy was a terrible influence on my sister. She stopped going to school, went to raves, and she was introduced to drugs thanks to her boyfriend. Her boyfriend was very well known in our small village, as only a few years back he had a huge drug raid at his old home. He also used to get into a lot of fights, big fights. He once almost killed a guy in just a fist fight. He was also well known to furiously beat on his girlfriends. So no surprise that neither of my parents approved of it. Well, this caused my sister to move out and go live with him. And as ridiculous as it sounds, it was out in a tent in a wooded area. You see, he was living there because he became homeless. So against my mom's better judgment, she actually invited him to live at our house just so she'd be able to know that my sister was safe. Now, I'm a very reserved and shy person, especially around people I don't know. He was no different. Obviously, he had to walk through my room to get to my sister's, and I had always assumed my uneasiness and uncomfortableness was due to not knowing him. Fast track a few weeks. By the time my sister turned 17, she found out she was pregnant. She was thrilled about it, but Steven wasn't. My mom was so disappointed that my sister had gotten pregnant so young, but she was happy to support her. One day my mom finds my sister distraught, and she tells my mom that Steven wants her to abort the baby, and that he even forced her to take a pill which would start the process. As bad as it sounds, I didn't really zone in to whatever was going on. At the time, I didn't realize that I was slowly sinking into depression. Fast forward a few months, and my sister and the boyfriend decided to keep the baby, and she had a growing belly while my depression worsened. At one point, I decided to try and tell my mom how I felt. She ended up sobbing and blaming herself for it, which only made me feel absolutely awful. Safe to say, I didn't try and tell her again. As the months go by, things start getting a little weird. I'd walk up in the night and find Steven just sort of standing in my room. As soon as he was caught, he would either rush into my sister's room or out of mine to go downstairs. As uncomfortable as it made me, I didn't bother to bring it up to my mom. We weren't on the best of terms at this point, as I had stopped going to school regularly until I just wasn't going at all anymore. The majority of the time I would spend in our shower room. Other strange things were the inappropriate comments on what I'd wear. I'm a well-figured girl, even from a young age, so the comments were normal from boys at my school, but it was really weird coming from my sister's boyfriend, not to mention how much older he was. There was one particular item of clothing that he had a liking for, a silk nightgown that was a little above the knee and had a small plunge in the neckline. As you know, I'm a reserved person, so showing my body really makes me uncomfortable. But I really liked this dress because of its softness, so I did wear it a lot, but that was before I noticed his strange attitude towards it. To start off, he simply said things like, "Hey, I really like that dress." I chose to just ignore him, but then he started to say, "I really like the way you look in that. I like when you wear that." I was just so creeped out and just stopped wearing it altogether, as well as wearing anything revealing around him at all. I went unbothered by him for a while. Then my sister had the baby, and me and her swapped rooms, as mine was just slightly bigger than hers. My mom and I were constantly arguing, well, more of her belittling me and just making me feel worse than I already did. So when my nephew was born on my birthday, I spent my birthday all alone the whole day, simply just crying in my room. I absolutely hated living there, and I wanted to be anywhere else. A few weeks pass, and my mom's and my own anger reach a boiling point, and we explode into an extremely awful shouting match. I still don't know why, but Steven decided to get involved and also began to disrespect me. At some point, my sister pulled my mom downstairs to try and calm her down and left me upstairs with Steven. He left my room, and I assumed went downstairs as well. Wrong. He had actually decided to shut my sister's door, came back into my room, and then shut my door. This is where things totally hit the fan. Steven completely blows up in my face. This terrifying 6-foot-something muscular man towered over my 5-foot-4 small frame as he shouted things that genuinely left me terrified. It gives me the chills just recalling it. He then screamed in my face, "If you were my own daughter and behaving like this, I'd lock you in a room with nothing but a mattress, and I'd only give you one meal a day." He continued to go on and on about how disgusting and disrespectful I was. I was on the verge of a panic attack. I swear I blacked out for a few seconds out of fear, which caused me to fall into my bed. He was so angry that he was physically holding himself back to not throw a punch at me. I could see it in his face. He wanted to hit me so badly. He would pull his arm back as if to throw a punch, but then he would stop when his fist came close to my face. I thought that he was going to beat me black and blue like he was yelling in my face that he would. But the most disturbing part of the situation, the one thing he said that I won't ever be able to forget, was when he hissed quietly in my face that I deserved to be beaten and raped. And then after that, he walked out and I sobbed against my bedroom door, absolutely terrified he would come back and keep to that promise. The next morning was a school day, and Steven decided that I needed to wake up at 6 a.m. and then came into my room, picked me up while I was asleep, and then dropped me. I woke up terrified and in pain. He then crouched down to be face to face with me, and he said if I didn't go to school, then he'd do a lot worse than that to me. He then went back to my sister in her room, told her what he did, and then they both laughed about it while I was crying in the next room. I went to school that day, not even bothering to retrieve my lunch from my mom. Once I was at school, I went straight to my favorite teacher and proceeded to have a complete mental breakdown about everything I've been going through. I explained what had happened and how I was too afraid to go home. Social services were called along with my mom. My mom told me the minute she found out what happened, she demanded that Steven take his stuff and get the hell out of our house. After that incident, I wasn't allowed to go out on my own because Steven had been threatening to kill me and set our house on fire. He had even attacked my older brother, who had to get stitches after having his eyebrow split open. Our house had to have a red alert on it, so if we called the police, they'd come straight away. After about a month or so, it went quiet, and we didn't hear from Steven anymore, and I was so glad. But then I was informed that Steven had been arrested. The reason? He had raped an old ex of his, one that lived in the same village as us, and he was being jailed for 8 years minimum. It scares me to think that when he said that I deserved to be raped, that he wasn't just saying that to scare me. What a psychotic, disgusting man. I wish to share a true crime account story that my grandmother Grace told me when I was a teenager shortly before she passed away. The story comes with a strong warning of sex and violence, and an adult with a minor. So anybody not wanting to listen, please skip this story. My great-grandmother's name was Grace. I won't use her last name for privacy reasons. She was born and raised in the state of Alabama in 1933 during the Great Depression. The Great Depression in America lasted from 1929 to 1939. It was hard all over the United States, but so tough in the South with all the jobless people, crops failing, and all the bread and soup lines. People just didn't have enough to eat. My great-grandmother's father was a farmer, and he owned a small farm and did pretty well for himself and his family. He was even kind enough to share his food from his farm with his neighbors as well as other needy people, so he was well-liked in the area. Well, Grace and the family and the rest of the country, thanks to God, made it through the Great Depression. It was now 1946, and Grace was now a 13-year-old teenager. Grace grew into a lovely teenage girl with long brown hair. She often wore a big red or pink bow in the back of it. She also had a busty and curvy figure that attracted many boys to her. Grace looked very pretty in her body-hugging dresses and nice pairs of shoes, and she knew it. Well, one of the many boys attracted to her was actually a man of 20 years old named Homer Garland Odom. Homer was out of school and was a bad boy type. He was deadly looking but good looking, with his dark brown hair with long sideburns and a nice build. He wore a black leather jacket and motorcycle boots on his feet. Homer loved to smoke Camel cigarettes. The age difference was a problem, and it was against the law, with Homer being 20 years old and Grace only 13, but they were secretive about it. Homer used to pick up Grace. No, not at her house, but just around the corner so her parents couldn't see how old he was. They wouldn't approve of a man like this with their daughter. Homer had a nice black motorcycle, and he also took Grace to hamburger joints and malt shops. They even had fun dancing together to the late 1940s big bands on Saturday nights. My great-grandmother Grace once asked Homer where he got his money. Homer simply replied that he worked as a local mechanic around the corner. Grace knew, though, that he probably did some illegal stuff on the side also, because he seemed like he always had enough money to spend on her, which she loved. Homer was usually really nice to Grace, but he did have a temper when angry, because she saw him beat up quite a few boys that crossed him. One day, Homer had asked Grace if she would like to have sex with him. Grace, who had several boyfriends and had kissed quite a few of them, just wasn't quite ready for this step just yet. After all, she was still only 13 years old in 1946. But one night alone with Homer in her father's barn, Homer got really rough with Grace. He forced her up the hayloft and then raped her. He really did a number on her, and he hurt her badly. Thrust so powerful that she almost passed out a couple of times. Back then, it was a little different than today. You didn't tell your parents if you were raped by somebody, but just kept it under wraps. And that's exactly what my great-grandmother Grace did. Even though she really wanted to tell somebody what he did to her, she was just too afraid to. Plus, if she did and everybody in town found out, she would be labeled as a tramp and a whore, and she certainly didn't want that. Alabama at this time had the electric chair for rape and murder, and if Grayson told the police what Homer did to her, Homer could have been put in the electric chair. The Alabama electric chair was called Yellow Mama back then because it was painted with the same yellow paint that they used to make highway lines. My great-grandmother Grace told me that even though Homer had raped her, they had still remained friends, even though they didn't date anymore. Homer had moved on with other girls his own age, which was safer for the both of them. Homer owned a .38-caliber revolver handgun that he had loved to shoot tin cans with in the back of his home, which was a huge field to shoot guns. When Homer was dating Grace, he'd even had her shoot his gun from time to time, helping her aim it at the tin cans for them to shoot. Grace didn't like guns, so she only tried his handgun just a few times, and that was it. Seeing Homer with his gun was chilling. Grace knew that a bad boy like him had probably robbed some stores before. That's probably how he got all that extra money to spend on his motorcycle, as well as the pretty young girls that he loved to take out on dates. So Grace thought to herself. Then the fateful day came on February 8th, 1949. Grace had heard that somebody had shot and killed the small grocery store owner William Alexander McDonald, who was 71 years old at the time. Well, Homer had killed him because the grocery store owner refused to give him the sack of money when he was closing up the store for the night. There were no eyewitnesses to the crime, but several witnesses saw Homer loitering around the small grocery store that afternoon until dark, waiting for it to close. He was doing that so he could rob the place. This suspicion caused the police to arrest him. Homer confessed to the murder as soon as the police arrested him, and he also told them where the gun was in his home that he used to kill the man with. While Homer was in jail, he had confessed again to the killing. In jail, things did not look good for Homer. It was now 1950, and an electrocution date for him was set on July 21st, 1950 in the electric chair called Yellow Mama. My great-grandmother Grace wanted to go to the Kilby prison in Alabama to say one last goodbye to Homer, but there was no way her parents would let her. They never liked him much anyway, and they grounded her severely for going out with such a dangerous man like this. Once they had found out all that happened between them, Grace told me that her parents were probably very happy to see Homer fry in that electric chair. Plus, how dare Homer for violating their underage daughter? This was truly unforgivable to them. Homer ordered what he wanted for his last meal, which was meatloaf with mashed potatoes and corn on the cob on the side, with a soda pop. He was planning at first to throw the food tray at the guards. Once receiving his meal, though, he had changed his mind because he was hungry, and he couldn't let that good food go to waste, since it was, after all, his final meal before going into eternity. After this, he did talk to his mother, saying that he was sorry for everything he did, and that he hoped that she would forgive him. Homer also got one last prayer from the prison chaplain, too, before he was set to walk his last mile to the electric chair. My great-grandmother Grace knew that Homer was probably nervous walking to the chair as he had chewed a large wad of gum walking there, but he never showed it. He was a tough guy, and he wanted to die as one. While Homer was strapped to the chair and a hood was placed over his face, they waited for one last call from the Alabama governor, James E. Folsom Sr., to halt the execution, but none came as the executioner then threw the switch. Homer Garland Odom was a strong boy, but the electric chair was stronger. Homer was dead within 2 minutes of throwing the switch. His gravestone now reads, Homer Garland Odom, born June 27, 1926, died July 21, 1950, gone but not forgotten. Homer Garland Odom was only 24 years old, not quite a month of 24 either. Very sad. What a wasted life he led, my great-grandmother Grace thought. She felt way more sorry, though, for the kind-hearted grocery store owner, William Alexander McDonald. He didn't deserve to get murdered in such a manner, but Homer did deserve to fry for it. Grace said she did still have feelings for Homer, though, as she would sometimes put roses on his gravestones before she had moved to another part of Alabama and then got married and started her family. Even though Homer was a bad man, he admired the good of Grace, and he wished he was more like her. At least that's what he said to her once. It wasn't just Grace's good looks that he liked. He liked her good heart and positive manner about life as well. Here's where the story ends.